Following podcast may contain content that is not suitable for all ages or sensitive ears. Please be responsible. Thank you and donkey. Hello, Save Them family. Landon here. Welcome to this episode of the Save Them podcast. And today we've got a very special From the Field in the Car episode where we're going to chit-chat a little bit with a field operative here in South Africa. We are in the field doing some fun stuff, and I'm just going to refer to him as Batman. I just wanted to tease his brain a little bit about a couple questions, give you guys a bit of feedback as to what's going on the ground, what we're trying to focus on, and what are some pain points so that you guys can be praying into the mission here and helping the church set this place on fire. So thanks for joining me, Batman.
Pleasure's mine, Lyndon.
Okay, we'll call you Bruce. Bruce Wayne. All right. Better than Batman. So, hey, give us just a little bit of your background. I think it's pretty important because you and I have talked a lot about what are the aspects in the counter-trafficking fight that are most helpful. And I think your background is part of that. So how'd you end up in this?
Well, Landon, thanks for the opportunity. I'm ex-law enforcement. I was a member of the South African Police Services. I was a detective in a specialized unit within the South African Police for a number of years. I then resigned and I went into the private sector. And at a fairly late stage of my life, I reached the crossroads and questioned a lot of things in my life, my purpose being one. There must be more to life than just living it. There's a lot of vulnerable people in our society. And in that, the organization that I head and founded was born because of my calling that I have to serve vulnerable children and women. And I've got a day job and I'm self-employed, and 3/4 of my day, sometimes most of the day, is what we do in the field, rescuing children and combating gender-based violence, and then also very active in the counter-human trafficking field, which has become a very big problem in our country.
Yeah. I mean, is it fair to say that there are not many full-time, true counter-trafficking assets on the ground in South Africa? It's a very under-resourced fight. Is that fair?
Yeah, you're on the nail there. You're on the mark. The thing is, there's a lot of organizations who profess to be counter-trafficking organizations. But in all fairness, they are the ones who do the awareness. There's a lot of awareness. But you need the boots on the ground. You need the people who are going to safeguard the children, and you need the people who are going to safeguard your victims or survivors. Right. I mean, spreading pamphlets can help to a certain degree, but you need to take that person out of harm's way.
Right.
Not enough organizations.
So can you walk us through a little bit of what an initiative looks like for you and your team? If you guys are going to make an intervention in the counter-trafficking space, what are some things you guys do and what does that look like?
So first and foremost, there are good policemen and women. Not all are the bad apples. It's a bit of a mission to get in contact and stay in touch with those law enforcement people who are the good operatives, and to work with them. So once you've got them on your side, I mean, you are 51% of the way there. Then you identify your various targets that you have, or the cases that you have, and you involve them from law enforcement for the legal aspects, to prepare that case for court, and to have a sound case for court. You always have to have law enforcement involved to have a favorable outcome.
Right. You're not just vigilantes running around trying to
not
save the world.
All. Yeah. I come from a strong law enforcement background. I have a lot of people who know me, and I know a lot of people in the game-changing positions that they are senior officials. And should you step out of line and they know that you are ex-law enforcement, you will receive the full brunt of the law. So there's a very fine, thin blue line that you walk on.
Right.
And still being a blue-blooded art, that's what we do.
Right. So yeah, because if you're crossing lines into the inappropriate, they know that you're making a concerted choice because you know what's right and what's wrong in that space.
Exactly. Yeah, they know that you know you shouldn't be there.
Right, yeah. Right. So what are some of the specific trafficking types of cases that you guys are seeing a lot of, let's say, in the past couple months?
Currently, Landon, the most prominent one is baby trafficking, especially your newborn babies, where your addict, your drug addict, your parents who are substance abusers will sell their children to get their next fix. We have a few cases in the High Court that are currently active, and then also cases that are pending that are with our prosecuting authorities, obviously tying up the loose ends for prosecution. But that is the main thing currently, not just the adult trafficking, because it's a dispensable, a child's life. What's a child's life? How much I want? 650 rand for the baby, take it, I've got a 2 or 3 days hit that I've got, take the child.
So I was actually just about to ask you that, because people always ask me, how much are the kids being sold for? So what's kind of a range that you see on the streets?
The cheapest one that we had was 650 South African rand.
That's like 30 US dollars.
The most expensive so far was, in our records, was 100,000. Then it went less than 24 hours. It went down to 50. Then it went down to 20,000. And then it went down to 5,000. And obviously we rescued the child. Child is in the place of safety. Parents are both being prosecuted for human trafficking.
So that went from like 50,000 US dollars down to 250 bucks. just because they were so desperate to sell.
Desperation, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really hectic. From $5,000 down to 250 just in a couple of days. That's nuts. I mean, this is something that you and I have talked about quite a bit, is the lack of value that people put on their own life and the lives of others. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. I think the thing that we see daily is the fact that there's no self-respect with the people who we are dealing with. And if they don't have any self-respect, how do they value or respect other people's lives? It's just null. Yeah. It's just not there. Yeah. It's absent.
Yeah. And I mean, is there a solution outside of the gospel to really change someone's heart? Like, what are some things? I mean, obviously, discipleship and, you know, having an identity in Jesus is always the best solution. Is there anything else that makes a difference, or is that really it? What have you seen?
Landon, as we discussed just now, I think once a person realizes you were born, God gave you a free will. And it is you and only you who can change your life around. We can lead the horse to the water, but you can't make it drink.
Yeah.
Once the substance abuser has realized that there is value to their life as a person, mm-hmm. I think then the penny will drop and they will realize they have to help themselves. Even though we've placed all the help possible on tables, there's rehabs, there's doctors, there's, you name it.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be helped, if you're not ready to be helped, no one is going to help you.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And kind of as an extension of that topic of choice, let's take just a second here and talk about a fairly controversial subject at the moment. And this has hit the South African press a lot. It's hitting all parts of the states. And it's this issue of prostitution. And the differentiating between prostitution and trafficking, I feel like it's a pretty confusing conversation out there. How are you guys dealing with that in your work?
Well, you obviously have to identify the elements of the crime before you start working with it. There's a lot of sex workers who do sex work by choice. And it sounds strange, but it is. It's their choice that they want to be a sex worker. But then you sit with the girls who are forced into that at a very young age. And it's very difficult to differentiate there and then on the ground when you are doing the intervention. So what we do try and do is remove that potential trafficked to extract that potential trafficked person to a safe space, and then after interviewing and doing the necessary interrogation, determining whether or not they qualify as a trafficked person. And more than often they don't, because they are there by choice. They want to be there.
Right. Now, that's a big dividing line when it comes to the children.
When it comes to kids, there's no question about that. Kids are removed immediately from those situations, and that is a completely different ballgame, and that is dealt with very firmly.
We got some potential incoming calls on the car dashboard. That's how you know we're really in the car from the field here. Somebody's trying to get a hold of Bruce Batman here. Let me ask you to give your opinion on something, because I've given my opinion. I think it's a dead horse we're flogging at this point. But this is this issue of lowering the age of consent, and it keeps coming up over and over again. I know that in Europe, the age of consent has been lowered drastically in many nations, and I know there's a movement in the U.S. to lower the age of consent to 14, and I know in South Africa, a lot of consent and legalities have been lowered. And so talk to me about the state of that and what's happening in South Africa regarding age of consent.
So age of consent in South Africa is 12.
12?
12 years old. Yeah, you can consent to sex as long as the age gap between the other sexual partner is not larger than a 2-year age gap. So if the girl is 12 and the boy is 14, that's okay.
Oh my goodness.
And then we sit with the teenage pregnancies. A little girl like that should still be playing with dolls, but now she is the head of a child household. She can't look after herself. She can't make decisions of what color sneakers she should be wearing, but she can consent to have sex. She can consent to have an abortion without her parents consenting to that.
So, you know, one of my big arguments around the lowering of the age of consent is it just opens the door wide open for child trafficking, because you can pretty much excuse away a lot of child trafficking as, well, you know, it was consensual. Have you kind of been seeing that, you know, siblings, trafficking siblings, stuff like that?
Yes. There's currently two cases that we're working on where the now 16-year-old sister actually lured her 12-year-old sister into the little network, that little sex network, and she was also impregnated by the 27-year-old perpetrator, who is now father to both siblings. He has fathered children with both of them. So, you know what, it's a hectic state, because as I said just now, the child does not know what color sneaker to wear, but she will consent to sex. Doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense. That's not even, I mean, in a lot of brain science will tell you, you're not even making fully formed decisions till you're 25. So you're not even halfway there. And you have the decision-making capability to have reproductive, life-changing, sexual I mean, this just doesn't make any sense. And now, extend that out, though, because okay, there's that age of consent thing, but then there's good old-fashioned pedophilia.
Yep.
I mean, I know there are some cases that just hit recently. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. Just rampant pedophilia, maybe without getting overly graphic, but this is crazy. Like, what are these dirty old men up to?
Exactly. There was a sting operation where Homeland Security was involved, and one of our specialized units in the South African Police Services down in the Eastern Cape. I think there were 7 perpetrators who were arrested in this pedophilia network. And the one guy, I speak under correction, it was either 15 or 25,000 videos of child pornography that they found on his electronic devices. And then that network has spread, as they call it, transatlantic. So it's off the African continent now, where other perpetrators are in Europe and I think in the States.
Yeah.
That are being starting to be investigated by your authorities now as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of where Save Them and our partners try to plug in to assist on these transatlantic things whenever we can. Because when you get a guy who has tens of thousands of pictures on his phone, I mean, there's not enough time in the day to sit there looking at that stuff even. So he's obviously a bigger role player than just a consumer. He's a distributor.
Yes.
Right?
He's manufacturer and a distributor.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And I know that that's something it's been mentioned to me in the past, and I wish for the life of me I could remember who told me this so that I could source it. And maybe it was our connections at Homeland Security Investigations, I'm not sure. But South Africa is a major producer of child pornography and one of the top producers per capita in the world of child pornography, and specifically snuff films, which is, you know, snuff films is obviously when there's the sexual activity, but then the person is killed. Those movies are put on the internet, you know, a lot of them on the dark web. Have you guys come across kind of this just proclivity of production when it comes to South Africa's role? And I'll just say, I don't think I've spoken to even one of our South African rescues who wasn't filmed during their time in captivity. I mean, they were all on porn in some way.
Yeah. And the sad thing in our country is the witchcraft, the Sangomas. So when it comes to the snuff movies and organ harvesting and stuff like that, it gets sort of lost in translation in the sense that it was a witchcraft ritual murder.
You're talking about black magic?
Black magic, okay. and the muti murders, as we refer to them.
Muti murders, yes.
Where various organs are removed from the body and certain rituals are performed with the organs. For the black magic powers.
How prevalent is that?
You know what? It's disguised under the muti murders. Every once in a while, you have this spark in it. But I think a lot of it goes under the radar because it's not reported. It passes through as a murder. And then the missing body parts aren't reported, etc. So
right.
I think a lot of it passes by under the radar.
Yeah, that's. I mean, we had this experience back in 2017 where there were a bunch of dead ladies that we were called in to review the bodies, and they all had a special kill signature, which we were able to tie to the occult. But the point being is that all of these ladies had a common connection, which is that they were all prostitutes who were being worked by the Nigerian crime syndicates. And so there was a connection there. But what the authorities didn't quite pull together was that all the organs had been taken out of all of these victims. So it was a calculated murder, but also the organs were taken out for further trafficking and organ harvesting. And then the bodies were dumped. And by making those connections between organized crime and the occult and the black magic networks, etc., that really, we were able to help the authorities a lot by understanding the criminal footprints and the connections. Have you guys come across much of that?
Yes, there's a syndicate that's currently being investigated on a very high level, where organ harvesting has taken place, then the empty corpse is being filled with drugs. The coffin is sealed for repatriation to a country, and there you continue with the drug trafficking. That is a thing that has stuck its head out here by us now as well. And it is being addressed, but let's hope we have some success very soon.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be awesome. I mean, that's one that we've heard victims talk about going back almost 10 years through our Save Them work, where girls who were trafficked were then converted into drug mules. And then the children, either their children who were killed or other children who were trafficked and killed for organ harvesting, those dead bodies were then filled with drugs. And the girls were literally walking the drugs of the dead, inside the dead children, across the border at the Kumatiport port of entry into Mozambique. But that's 10 years ago. I wasn't sure if that kind of thing is still...
Yeah, they've changed the game plan quite a bit. They now use funeral parlors, and I mean, the corpses are in lead sealed coffins that are transported out of the country via aircraft. Wow. Via registered funeral parlors.
Right.
So I mean, there's very strong and strict legislation,
yeah,
about transporting of the dead, etc.
Sure.
And they're taking full advantage of that. So, I mean, imagine you open a coffin, you've got this information, and it's not what it should be.
Yeah.
You have a normal person who's deceased, and there's no drugs. I mean, you open yourself to horrific lawsuits. So that is why it's so important, the groundwork that we do in the field, that we work with the correct people and we get positive intel to work with.
That's excellent. That's excellent. And one thing I want to ask you about is the shifting nature of the local dynamics in South Africa. One thing I noticed when I flew into South Africa this last time was, I would say probably 20% of the people in the passport control line were Chinese. And I was noticing that they had Chinese passports and they had South African permanent resident cards. And I know that over time, this was also an issue where, let's say, a bunch of Nigerians came in, or a bunch of people from the DRC came in under asylum, and then they get permanent residence,
yeah,
in South Africa, to such an extent that I remember a few years back, South Africa had to cancel missionary visas into South Africa because they were being abused and false churches were being set up for trafficking purposes. I just mentioned the Chinese thing because I'm just seeing there's such an influx of foreign nationals to South Africa. How does the foreign national thing, and by extrapolation, you know, in the U.S. we're dealing with all this stuff currently with a lot of people coming across our southern border, and these children are just disappearing into the interior. How is South Africa dealing with this changing demographic of foreign nationals?
Landon, that's a whole new ball game, eh? Because of South Africa being a hub in the business world now, currently, we are sitting a lot with labor trafficking. As in droves of foreign nationals.
Wow.
There's a case now, I can't elaborate too much on it, so I'm not going to give you any figures, but a huge amount of Chinese nationals that were identified in a labor trafficking syndicate.
Mm.
So yes, they do come to our country. I'm not just picking on a specific ethnic group or a country, but they come to the country in droves, open new businesses, but along with that comes all the challenges. Yes, you want to help your people from your country. You want to give them jobs.
Mm.
But those people are potentially trafficked or are trafficked, labor trafficked.
Mm.
They're exploited. They're exposed to harsh working circumstances, etc. And it's rough, eh?
I definitely actually saw a documentary took place in Australia recently, and a bunch of Chinese immigrants have been brought into Australia, and they were being trafficked through hotels and also into massage parlors. But when the investigation was completed by the Australian authorities, they found that all of the money for these operations were going straight back to very specific entities and very specific locations in China. So it wasn't like that some people showed up in Australia and set up some local illicit operations. No, no, this was a trans, well, that's not transatlantic or trans-Pacific, that's trans something, I don't know, trans-China Sea or whatever, but it's an overseas operation. Like, we have to understand that we're in a very networked, interconnected world these days, and, you know, I remember back when we would find so many Thai women being trafficked through South Africa, and that we actually had information about how Thai crime syndicates were pulling women across the Indian Ocean and trafficking them into South Africa. So this stuff happens all day long, and it's important that we understand that just because I live in, I don't know, Omaha, Nebraska, doesn't mean that I'm immune to the global trafficking networks, and that trafficking that originates in Mumbai, India, may not show up in downtown Omaha, Nebraska, because that's how networked this has become, really, everywhere. All right. Well, cool, man. Well, any other things you want to share, Bruce Batman?
You know, if we don't stand together and you don't use the voice you have, you're not going to make a difference. So to us as an organization, I mean, forming an alliance with Save Them, to me, has been very important and also very effective in the work that we do, because our reach is so much further, and we serve common ground, and we are both godly organizations who serve our living God, and that it's a calling that we live. We actually live our calling.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think our authority partners appreciate that. They kind of know where we stand, and it creates a bit of a trust bond over time. And it's important both ways. We got to be able to trust them, and they got to be able to trust us.
Exactly.
And
exactly just that.
That goes a long way.
The good police, there's lots of them there.
Yeah,
lots of them.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've kind of mentioned this on a couple of the podcasts, but I'm a little bit tired of everybody dissing on everybody all the time, because not every policeman is corrupt.
And not every prostitute is a trafficking victim.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And this is a real sore point in South Africa, because there are loads of nonprofits that are trying to rake in the donations. And what happens is they take what we'll call voluntary prostitutes off the street, and they'll put them in some sort of well care center for a couple days, and then the girls go back to work. And meanwhile, these nonprofits are racking up the statistics on quote unquote trafficking rescues. Well, that's fraud. That's fraudulent. That's lying, and that's deceiving. And that's, to me, that's actually really, I don't know if blasphemy is the right word, but it's definitely stealing from the body of Christ, because a lot of these organizations are targeting the church. And the church is very well-meaning and wants to help, but they're taking donations and things like that to perform a rescue operation or something like this that isn't real. It's not actually dealing with actual trafficking. So I really appreciated what Bruce was saying a little bit earlier, because when it comes down to real trafficking, you're going to have case numbers at the police station. You're going to have victim profiling. You're going to have psychological exams from caseworkers. You're going to have all kinds of stuff, as opposed to an in and out optional individual, which, look, I don't think any of us thinks that that's a good life to live. Okay, there's no argument there. But when you're dealing with trafficking, you're dealing with a criminal enterprise. You're dealing with someone who's been coerced and forced against their will, and that person does not want to be in that situation. Therefore, removing them is part of the solution. So we got to be really intentional about how we differentiate and be real honest about what we're doing and what we're claiming we're doing. So anyways, all my hobby horse there, but it is a pain point. And it creates distrust amongst the authorities, as to who they actually want to partner with in the counter-trafficking fight, because they don't know who's in it for personal gain and who's in it to actually make a difference. And so, yeah, that's why these networks grow slowly and grow amongst trusted individuals that we just get to know. And really, trust takes time and it's earned. It's not something that happens overnight. So, anyhow, enough of my soapbox. Thanks for taking the time today, Bruce. We're kind of in the car driving through some bumpy roads into it. In South Africa, always feels like the middle of nowhere, but then suddenly you show up and you're in some beautiful somewhere. And so, yeah, it's a good place to work, and we're hoping to make a difference. We got some conversations to be had, and hopefully some lives will be changed. So keep us in your prayers, and thank you for caring enough to listen through to today's podcast. This is Landon and Bruce, and we're out. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Save Them Podcast. As always, you can find us at savethem.org. See you next time. Thank you, and donkey.